You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Good morning. Good afternoon. It was a crazy week, fun week. Last week we saw this movie, Nobody. My buddy Bob Odenkirk, he FaceTimed a group. I rented a theater. You went with me, Ryan.
I did.
I rented a theater at City Walk. It was, you know, like $300, $350, and had like 15 friends that were all vaccinated, and we went and watched this movie, Nobody, which I really enjoyed. Didn't you?
It was great.
It really was fun. It was fun to be in a theater again.
It was fun to be in a theater because Amanda and I had seen that when it came out on like on demand.
And so you liked it enough that you wanted to see it again.
Because it's much more fun that way. Because this was like, it's like John Wick. It's an action movie, and you need to sort of, the audience reactions to throats getting ripped out or stepped on is kind of necessary.
It was fun. I had a real good time. My buddy Harlan Williams was with me and a bunch of other friends. But Harlan, you know him from Dumb and Dumber, you know. You drinking on some of Grandpa's cough medicine, are you there, buddy? But he was just commentating the whole time, which was funny because every time Christopher Lloyd came on, he'd go, "Great Scott!" from, you know, Back to the Future, played Doc. And everybody was, it was just fun to be with a group of friends and laughing and having popcorn. And I really enjoyed it. That was nice. I really want to thank Kiefer Sutherland and Jason Patrick for last week's episode. That was, it went viral. And if you haven't seen that one, I think you're going to want to see it. They really opened up, and I've got a lot of people emailing me and texting me and tweeting me that they really love the episode a lot. And also John Glover, who played my father in Smallville, he's, you know, Michael, you know, his partner, Adam, who never really compliments anybody, says that interview was the best interview you've ever done. And then somebody called me and said, you know, it was the best interview a close friend of Kiefer's said it was the best interview he'd done. It just means a shit ton, man. I'm like, really? I always feel awkward. I never watch him. I feel like I look like a dork, and I'm like, you know, I feel like a kid asking these questions. And overall, but look, it's, you know, I'm really happy with the episodes, and I commend Ryan here for great editing, and Bryce and for the producing. But thank you for, if you haven't checked out Kiefer and Jason Patrick, I think you should.
Yeah. Everyone was excited that you broke sort of it's like a 30-year-old story, really.
I broke a 30-year-old story of
apparently
the divorce, the breakup with Kiefer and Julia Roberts, and then Julia Roberts taking off to Ireland with Jason Patrick. And they're both sitting in the same room talking about this, and they're still close friends. But I urge you to watch the episode. It's good to see these guys together. So thank you for listening. Also just want to say thanks to Hint Water. They just give me water. They don't give me money or anything, but I'm always drinking Hint Water. So thanks, Hint. Thanks, Red Bull, for keeping me awake. I don't drink a lot of Red Bull, but when I do, I apparently need it.
That's the Dos Equis slogan, though.
What is it?
I don't always drink beer, but when I do, I prefer Dos Equis.
I don't always drink beer, but when I do. Wow, I didn't know that. Thank you guys for watching or listening to the podcast. Again, you know, it's important. If you're here for Erica Christensen, who I love and adore, I urge you to subscribe to the podcast and listen to other people. You'll learn something. Hopefully I learn something every episode. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. You could follow us at Inside of You Pod on the Twitter. And if you want to subscribe, you could subscribe on YouTube, Ryan.
YouTube.com/InsideofYouMichaelRosenbaum.
And if you want, and you could also subscribe on Apple and Spotify and what else? A lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Stitcher?
Probably.
Yeah, there's a lot of places. So I urge you to do that. Write a review. Keep this show going. Thank you, Westwood One. Thank you, everyone who listens. All my patrons. Thank you for the support and the love. And if you want to join Patreon, it's a wonderful place to be. It's, you know, for folks that love the podcast, they subscribe to the Patreon. You get a lot of perks. There's a lot of fun stuff on there. There's tiers where I send you merch and little notes from me. And it's a lot of fun. It's family. And people come there and they thank me for, I met my closest friend ever now, or I met my boyfriend, or they become, there's just all these people who have become these friends on this platform of Patreon. So go to Patreon, patreon.com/inside, meet new friends, support the podcast. I'll write a message to you right after you do it. Also, if you want to get any merch, go to the Inside of You online store and there's Lex Luthor stuff and Smallville stuff and Inside of You stuff. And also the band, I got to throw out the band. We're going to be performing again May 29th, Saturday. Put this in your calendars, May 29th, Saturday. Two shows, 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We're going to play some covers and some Left on Laurel tunes and some Sunspin tunes. My band is Sunspin. And you can go to sunspin.com and book the band, book Zooms, and you can get a whole bunch of cool merch. So there's that. Today's guest, you like this episode.
It was a good one.
I like it because she's so open and free and such a wonderful woman inside and out. She talks about her pregnancy and giving birth, and it was miraculous. I was stunned and a little shocked at times, but like I just think she's such a wonderful woman and so smart, and she educated me like most people do. Mm-hmm. So without further ado, why don't we just jump into it? This is a fun episode. I hope you like it. Let's get into Erica Christensen.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Erica, you look fantastic for someone who's dating who's married to a cyclist and has two children running around. I don't know how you look so refreshed.
Thank you. The kids are a bigger factor than I think the husband. But, you know, listen, it's so weird. It's categorically, you not having children means that there's all kinds of things I could say to you that are completely irrelevant. You're like, oh, yeah, sleep training. And we, you know.
No. So many- Stop. Talk about sleep training right now, because I don't sleep well. What do you mean sleep training? You sleep training. Train the children to sleep, or you train yourself to sleep?
Train the children to sleep, but I've been wondering also how to apply that to ourselves. See, the thing is that in the children, what you are developing as a skill is going to sleep without dependence upon anything, without dependence upon, you know, the bottle or being rocked or whatever. The idea is to get them comfortable with just being in their own bed when it's nighttime without you, and then they'll go to sleep. And then staying asleep is a different thing. Like staying asleep for babies is just not getting hungry, which is not a problem for us, right?
Right. Now, how old are the children? How old are the children?
2.5 and 4.5.
So there's no breastfeeding anymore.
There shouldn't be. And the 2.5-year-old is like not getting much nutrition probably from it, but she's still.
What are you saying? What do you mean?
She's straight up. I mean, like my body is not like feeding the child. She's just, you know, she pacifies. She likes the comfort, especially when it's nighttime, but she can totally talk. So she goes, I want a nurse. I'm like, you can't, it's not bedtime.
Wait a minute, because I've said that before, but it's a different kind of nurse. So I want a nurse. She wants to nurse, you know, from your bosom.
Yeah. Oh, she straight up says, I love your boobies. I'm like, okay.
Does Cole say that? Okay. Did she learn that from dad? I love your boob. What if he said to you while you're in bed together, I love your boobies.
I love your boobies.
I love your boobies.
Oh, now, God. I don't know if I'm doing her a disservice or it does.
What does it do?
There is a bit of a dependency there in talking about, you know, fostering that independence and that not needing anything to go to sleep except yourself. She does need that.
All right, so wait a minute. You're teaching her how to sleep, but you're not teaching her how to back off the boobs.
I mean, I am because... No, you're right.
You just got a ixnay on the breast nay.
Yeah.
It's got to be... How old is she? She's 2.5.
She's 2.5.
Okay, so I don't know how old you are when you're supposed to stop breastfeeding. I don't know what the rule is, but I probably... I don't think I breastfed. I think... is that right? Breastfed?
You were like bottle fed?
I was bottle fed, Enfamil. That's why I'm all effed up. I'm effed, Enfamiled up.
Oh no!
But what is that? It's not good. You should breastfeed, right? Is that what you believe?
Ideally, yeah. Ideally, nutritionally, it's there for a reason. It's awesome if you can.
I got to tell you, hang on. I got to tell you that I'm happy no matter how effed up I am. And maybe it was caused by not breastfeeding. But the fact that I wasn't on my mom's breast, that makes me happy. The fact that I wasn't. Like the thought of like my mother, my mouth on my mother's breast, for me, I know it's a natural thing, but for me, I'm glad I didn't do it.
Well, that's good then. That's perfect.
Is it? Is
it good? I mean, I don't know. You retroactively got what you wanted.
Doesn't it hurt?
Not anymore. There's a period of getting used to it for sure. It can hurt very badly. I didn't cry during childbirth. I have cried during nursing.
Really? Like, oh my God, you're hurting me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's like, Mommy, but, cry.
Yeah. Why you cry?
You are why I cry. You don't
you're
say
hurting
that.
Me. Yeah. But fortunately, my children don't bite. My children didn't bite. So
thank God.
That's an extra part of it. This is strange. This is like a whole category of conversation that to parents is normal territory.
Well, why like no, but it's not. It's for me. It's like if I ever want to have a kid, I can kind of like this could either sway me in either direction. I could be like, wow, you know. I mean, look, I don't have to breastfeed, but you know, there's a lot to parenting, and I think it's important. I think you know, I had Erica Durantz, who is Lois Lane on Smallville, and she's done a bunch of other stuff. But she talked about postpartum and stuff, and I'll tell you what, so many people wrote in and were. It just was very important that she talked about that. And what seemed odd, not odd to me, but probably maybe a little weird that a single guy who has not been married, he's asking all these questions, but I do it because I think it's a real issue. And I think it's like, I had a friend who lost his wife to postpartum and all the things that go on with raising a child. So, I mean, did you have any kind of issues when you first had a baby or was it kind of smooth sailing? Or you just really enjoyed the whole motherhood or did you have issues or things that were happening that you're like, I don't understand why I'm not happy or I don't know. Some people it's easy. Some people it's not.
Well, it was, I mean, of course, as with anything, there's a whole, you know, scale, there's a spectrum of experience and mine was on the easier side, but you can imagine, just imagine not getting more than a couple hours of sleep at a time for several months.
Crap.
You know, it's like it would affect anyone. And so and learning how to nurse, if you're going to do that, it depends. For some people that just comes supernaturally and, you know, you're like, there you are, a cavewoman with your child and they nurse and everything's wonderful. But that's definitely like for me, that was a big learning curve. And so one of the times that I cried when I was nursing was just because I couldn't do it. Like, that sounds weird. Like, how can it just not work? But it can just not work where you just can't get them to understand your boob and how to get the milk out. And you're just like, come on,
oh,
you know?
God, that sounds frustrating.
It's bizarre. But then there are people who are lactation consultants and they're angels. And
lactation consultants.
Yeah.
What about lactation free consultants?
I'm sure there are those too.
Because I have a little problem
like
with the lactate.
Pediatric nutrition. Here's what to feed your child if you're not going to nurse. There's a whole, I mean, you know how you said, like, let's talk about something controversial. We could talk about politics. But but what led me to that is there's this thing where, you know, the country has become so divided and so partisan that oddly, a bunch of ideas and concepts and philosophies that aren't directly like, I'm in favor of this sort of bill, this sort of legislation and stuff like that have been divided. And I'll explain further what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is I have fed my children and continue to raw milk. And especially also when I was having a tough time nursing, I was like, I need a backup plan. I need some assistance. My child can't starve while we're figuring this out. Right. And then also I needed some help when I was like, working and the baby's still nursing. And so I'm pumping and we have breast milk, but I also need the raw milk. And then raw milk is just a huge, like, it's a huge, like.
Like what?
It gets categorized on the side of conservative, like, freedom, you know, freedom from government regulation and.
I don't understand. I'm not aware of this stuff.
I understand.
Ryan, are you do you know about this stuff? Good. Educate, because I don't know about this. I didn't know there was a sort of a divide on raw milk.
Well, yeah, because categorically it goes into the, you know, natural sort of non-medical, non-mandated vaccines. Not, it kind of gets lumped over into this whole side of governments, the government not controlling what we eat and, of course, and what we do to our bodies, except for abortion. That goes on the other side.
Right.
There's this weird gerrymandering of ideology, right? But on this side, like, you have to trace it back to, okay, when, I mean, were you even aware that milk wasn't raw?
Ryan, we weren't aware of that.
It's pasteurized, right? Pasteurized.
Yeah, right. That's what I always knew. The milk was pasteurized. Louis Pasteur invented that.
Exactly. And when Louis Pasteur invented it, it was for a purpose. It was for killing bacteria. Mm-hmm. Whatever the outbreak was at the time that they were addressing, that was effective. And so, great. But we live in a different time now. We don't have the same issues. And the people that produce unpasteurized milk take great pride in the safety measures that they take so that they can provide it to you and they're not exposing you to something. You know, their cows are very healthy. This seems so random.
It's interesting.
It's a big deal because in traveling about the country, I have, you know, there are many states where it's just illegal. And then there are many states where you can get it, but it's labeled. It has to be labeled as for pet consumption only. And so you have to go, like, talk to the farmer and go, okay, can I buy a gallon of milk? Like, we're not going to talk about the fact that I'm going to drink it and my kids are going to drink it. And they're like, yeah, we're not, you know, just take the milk.
So who looks down on you? Is it the Democrats or is it the Republicans? I can't understand.
It's a liberal side of, like, trust the science. Louis Pasteur did this for a reason. You know, the doctors say it's not safe.
Right.
So don't drink raw milk, you know, and they'll tell pregnant women, don't drink raw milk. You could expose yourself to all kinds of bacteria. And surely that's true, or it was.
But if you go to the right, like, farmers that are doing it correctly and healthy and organically, it's not. It was a problem many moons ago before we...
Yeah.
Okay, I got you. I'm with you. It's not, this isn't weird. This is educational. You are educating me and my friend Ryan. And I'm glad Ryan wasn't like, of course I know this, because I would have been like, oh God, I'm an idiot.
It is a little bit strange.
But I always, yeah, like, I, yeah, go ahead.
Well, but like the fact that I'm tying this to politics at all was obviously there is legislation against raw milk, which is, so it is a thing, but like.
You're a criminal.
I'm a criminal. No, it's legal in California in some ways. And so I can get it. Organic Pastures is the name of the company. They're wonderful. They're in Northern California. Yay. They give me raw milk and raw cheese and raw butter and raw cream.
Wow. Is it delicious?
It's delicious. And apparently people that are lactose intolerant, which you are, right?
Yeah.
Are you? Yeah. Apparently they can drink it with no problem.
And cheese?
Because the enzymes that help you digest it are still alive. They haven't been killed. So
hang on. Can I come over your house for some cheese and hopefully not as many farts?
Oh, please.
I'm not kidding. If you're telling me there's a chance that raw milk and raw cheese I could eat and not be bloated, I would try that. Why wouldn't I try that, Ryan? Because you might get polio. What? Uh-huh. Polio? Polio
exactly. Isn't even... What year is this?
What year are we in? Hey, you know, it's funny because I don't use the word hippie in a bad way. Hippie's a good... I like the word hippie. In fact, yeah. my dad was a hippie and I believe my uncle. But, you know, when I think about you and Cole, your husband, I think about just kind of free, spirited, loving, in the sense of hippie kind of family. Like just kind of, just like in a good way.
And I can dig it.
Yeah, I can dig it. I just kind of feel like you have a, there's a certain lifestyle that you live, and maybe I'm wrong, but that is just, I mean, I'm sure there's stress and there's, you know, the child isn't taking the breast and there's angst and, but overall, I mean, like, do you feel like you're like, you have a happy, loving family that's just kind of free and fun and just like that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we're very connected to like nature. We take the kids out all the time to hikes and hiking through like, you know, up, do you know Angeles Crest? Up off the two Angeles Crest Highway, there's like hikes that you can go to waterfalls.
And what? Like how long are these? How long are these hikes?
They're doable for at least the big kid, for Shane. So they're like, I mean, you could even get some that are only like 20 minutes.
Ooh, you'll have to give me directions to that 20 minute and one.
Then, these are secret spots. You know, they have like swimming holes and jumping rocks, and we take the kids out to Vasquez Rocks.
Well, I want to go to these things. I'm going to learn a lot from you.
Dude, they're amazing. You should Google Vasquez Rocks for sure. That's like an hour drive and it's like you're on Mars. It's just incredible terrain.
And there's not a lot of people there, really?
No, we've been there during COVID and it's very easy to not come within 25 feet of a human.
Hey, for someone who's so, you know, you're obviously so talented, you've done so much work, you've been on series. I mean, Parenthood lasted for 6 years, 5 years?
Yeah, six. Yeah.
I mean, you've done movies and this. Has this been a tough time for someone who, you know, loves working? And it's just a weird time anyway. It's like, I don't even want to work during this time. I can't imagine being on set with masks and this and protocols and tests. And I just rather like, let it go, let it get done and let's get back to work. But I don't know how it's going to be. What are you doing anything right now? Have you decided like, hey, I'm going to wait until kind of shit gets better? Or are you like craving to work?
Yes, the latter. I'm craving to work. Having all this time with the kids has been amazing. And at their ages where they need, you know, direct supervision and contact so much of the time anyway. And we've done all these family adventures, and we've also been responsible. We've also, you know, not left the house for large periods of time. But it's been really fun. And I know that I would be taking it even harder if I didn't have the kids, but I want to get back to work. You know that Betsy Brandt lives kind of near us. She was walking by the house yesterday and she was like, let me tell you, when you go back to work, the anxiety will hit you. It's going to be weird. You're going to get tested. Everybody's waiting, you know, and then there's like wanting to keep your space from people. And then they only do, I think, one person in the hair and makeup trailer at a time, which is very weird,
slow,
socially and sad and slow. But I want to go back to work. I trust Hollywood to do it responsibly. I just found out from my friend that's working on what's Ted Danson's new show?
Kramer versus Kramer. What is it?
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Mayor. You want to audition for that?
No. My buddy is pulling focus on that, and he said they had to shut down early. But he said the studio is spending a fortune on testing and prevention measures. Like it's a safe thing. You know, if anybody tests positive anywhere,
shut down.
Yeah.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Well, I wanted to circle back on the hippie thing because you are very right in one respect. Last time I did a podcast, Mm-hmm. I was about to pop with a baby on your couch.
Yep. You walked up my huge street, which is not easy, and you were pregnant.
A steep hill, and I was very pregnant, and you were worried that I was my water was going to break on your couch.
I wouldn't know what to do.
My water didn't break either time, actually. That's the thing. Let's, you know, whatever.
What do you mean either time?
Either child.
Oh, okay. Either time. I thought you meant either time you walked up here. I thought I just talked to you once, but go ahead.
But then I walked back home, and sometime maybe 4 weeks later or something like that, I had the baby, right? And then there are stories. It's kind of generally accepted that your second child comes faster than the first child. The labor is shorter, right? The body's, there's some muscle memory involved and so forth. And so I went into labor at like 4 a.m. And I figured, all right, I'll take some time to myself. I stayed in bed for a while, stayed in bed for an hour. And then I went to the kitchen and made myself a pour over coffee for an hour and labored in the kitchen by myself. And then I woke up cold, and we already had planned on having the baby at home. So we were just like, okay, everything's on track. We're going to relax. We're going to have some breakfast. I called my mom and said, don't worry about it. I just went into labor, have some breakfast and come over later, whatever. All of a sudden, the baby is coming out of me, basically. Like, I was like, oh my God, I could feel the difference. There's a change. There's a whole part of labor where your body's getting ready to push the baby out. And then there's like the home stretch, which is then your body's pushing the baby out. And I called the doctor because he was kind enough to do it, come to my home. And I said, I went into labor a few hours ago. The baby's coming out right now. Can you come now? And he was like, why didn't you call me earlier? I said, I didn't know it was going to happen this fast. He gets stuck in traffic, and Cole and I are completely alone. He delivers the baby himself right on our bed over there in the peace and quiet, except for Shane is in the living room watching The Lion King.
Not crying, going, mommy's crying.
No, mommy wasn't crying. Mommy was calm and quiet, and baby was in the, she was watching The Lion King and eating bacon, and daddy was in here. And we didn't say anything. We were just, there was a little bit of like anxiety and tension because we were waiting for the doctor. And at a certain point, we realized he's not going to make it. He's not going to come in time. And then all of a sudden that waiting just dissipated and that anxiety dissipated. And Cole said one thing. He looked at me and said, just so you know, I'm not freaking out. I said, great. And then he delivered the baby. And we are there hugging her, and she's taking her first little breaths and cries when the doctor walks into the bedroom. And he's like, so how'd you do? And we're like, oh, we did great. Look, there's the baby.
And then you're like, you're not charging me.
And of course he is. And he's not in network.
Well, hang on. Let's go back. So because the first thing that happens when you're telling the story is I feel joy. I feel excited. Okay. It's an adrenaline thing. But then I think, yeah, if it happened to me, do I cut something? Am I supposed to cut something? What do I do here? What do you have to do?
Well, that part, Cole was about to go find like a vice grip to clamp the cord and cut it.
Vice grip.
But by that time, the doctor was there. That part is less instinctual. So yes, I'm grateful for the doctor for all of that follow-up.
What do you have to do, though? I mean, like, can the baby, how soon after do you have to cut the umbilical cord?
You don't have to cut the umbilical cord. There's no rush. You're even the you know, natural side of things, which I tend to go in that direction. The natural side of things is you are to let them stay connected to the cord until the blood and everything stops pumping through it. And that could be 10 minutes. Also, I just don't think there's any real.
Is it dangerous if you cut it? Just like you cut it? Is there a right way to cut it? Do you get the vice grips? Do you get a clean pair of scissors? Do you kind of carve it with a butter knife? What do you do there?
It's not easy to cut. So you need something sharp for sure. I imagine you need to clamp it, but I don't know. Maybe not. Let's go back to the cavemen. I don't know.
Yeah, they're like, And then they cut it. Yeah, they chew on it for a while. So that is back to the hippie thing. That is a little like most people don't do that. And I, by the way, if you just did the sound effects, this is what I'd probably hear at your house. Okay. It'd be like, that's the bacon. And then, Kuna Matata. That's exactly what would happen. I mean, I could just sense it.
We have one little video. Cole set up the GoPros to try to film it and they ran out of battery or whatever. We have one little video taken on my phone that's a time lapse of me laboring on the bed. But there's no audio, but you can see me kind of like shifting positions and breathing.
You can't show me though, because you're naked.
No, I'm not actually. I think I'm wearing clothes at that point.
Can I see it?
Yeah, let me find it.
Can we?
I mean, how quickly can I find it?
So this happened 2.5 years ago. I'll tell you that much.
Right. So that's correct. Oh yeah, I'm wearing shorts and a sports bra.
All right, let's see it. Prop it up.
So it is,
ladies and gentlemen. It is now a time lapse of Erica Christensen's birth at her house, hippie style, Jack Kerouac style, Woodstock style.
Okay. There we go.
We'll put music over it. Breathing heavy, lying down.
It's like the reflection. This is.
Are you like your arms in the air? You're not stressed, you're saying. It's kind of like I'm not. You're actually in great shape, by the way. I noticed that. Like a pregnant woman who's just really in shape, stretching, kicking her legs. Here comes Cole. I've got this.
Oh, there's you.
And then fast forward a little bit.
Oh, and then there's blackness, which I don't know if my phone fell. Oh, it fell over. That's what happened. My phone was just sitting on the desk and it fell over.
Were you just pissed?
No, I mean, hey.
Like, what are you going to do?
When you get a baby in your arms, there is definitely like a bliss that takes over. And there's all kinds of hormonal reactions. The postpartum thing being a separate thing, there is like, there's your body knows what it's doing, and so a lot of the time, it can even just knock my printer over. It can even, you know, block the nerve channels to the pain. The baby blocks off your circulation to, so it's a natural painkiller,
right? If I was pregnant right there, I would have been jumping off the walls like, help, I'm dying. There's something in me. Get it out.
You don't know that.
I don't know that, but I'm a kind of a puss when it comes to that stuff.
It's such a different kind of physical experience. It's like, it's athletic. It's an athletic experience. You know,
it's an athletic experience. I like that.
Yeah. They call it labor. You're working. Your muscles are working. You get warm. You know, and you have to just.
If it's that, if you're saying it's athletic and it's labored, then why can so many out of shape people give birth?
Because, I mean,
if you need to be athletic or you need, it's a hard labored thing, but like if it's hard, I need to get in shape for this, don't I? That's why it's better to be in shape for it, right?
It is better to be in shape. It does put you at an advantage so that it's an easier time for you, but. But the muscles that you're using, you cannot condition, you know, so you can condition the rest of your body, but your uterus, you're not going to exercise your uterus any other time. You can't prep for that. So but I'm saying kind of psychologically, if you can compare it to another experience that you've had, like if anybody that's like done something, anybody that's run a marathon or run any kind of length of time that they put their body through some stress and they mentally overcame that and pushed through and just knew like, all right, well, so I'm going to be uncomfortable, but
right.
Then it's going to be over and it's going to be worth it. And I'm going to be proud and happy or whatever. You know, I feel like I keep expecting you to say like, oh yeah, like I do, you lift weights, you know, it doesn't always feel good.
No, I hate it. I hate lifting weights, but I know that exercise does help my brain, if nothing else.
Yeah.
It helps me just the anxiety. So I assume that as a pregnant woman, you know, and you're giving birth, if you can reduce that anxiety and kind of relax, it's like, I hate to say this, but it's probably like, it's not going to surprise my guests, but it's like you know, taking a big poop. If, you know, if you're pushing, you're going to hurt yourself and you're stressed and it's anxious and you'll get a hemorrhoid potentially. But like the reality is if you just relax, it's going to be smooth sailing and you could go afterwards, call some friends and say, wow, that was, I got to tell you about this crap I just took.
That's not a crazy analogy.
Okay, good. Were you glad when she was out? Like, oh, or did you go through that?
I'm sure I was.
Well, like you but said, some so people, fast. There's a connection, right? It happened so fast.
It was, yeah. So it was, I mean, I was kind of just like both times I was both births, right? I was kind of like just amazed. Like that there were two people in a room and now there are three people in a room. It's just weird. It's a very existential experience, you know?
Yeah, you know what's funny is, not funny, but I actually read something a long time ago that someone recommended husbands not being in the room and watching the baby come out because some people, you'll lose attraction to your wife. I've read that somewhere. No, I'm not kidding. They said that if
that's
you watch
so
50s. It, maybe like I'm just saying, and I was like, was that true? That sucks because I'd want to see my child born. So you don't think like, but see, Cole's an anomaly. Cole's a man. He's like, I love my wife. I love my kid. I want to get bloody. I want to fucking grab vice grips. I want to cut this shit. Fucking baby. So he's an anomaly. So some men would be like, oh my God, her vagina was so big and it is blood and I can't deal with it.
I think it's just like a separate experience to the rest of your life. It just, nothing matters in that moment except what's occurring. I mean, maybe that's not true if you're just standing aside and the doctors are all doing everything and you're like, you get a view over there and you're like, oh, look at her body. But, you know, I'm like, God, that's gotta hurt. But Cole, even the first time when the doctor did make it in time, barely, he was like shoulder to shoulder with the doctor. And the doctor was like, okay, you know, he had already said, like, when the baby comes out, you can put the baby on Erica's chest and you can cut the cord and the whole thing. So Cole was like watching the entire time and as a more of a participant than an outside observer who's like in the back of the room being like, oh, what's happening with the grossness over there? He's like, there's a baby coming out. Like, let's focus on what's happening, I think.
Wow.
And then, like I said, it's just like, it's such a separate experience. Then you go back to life and then, you know, your wife's body goes back to normal.
Well, I appreciate you being so open and forthcoming with this stuff because I think it is educational for whether a guy or a female listening who hasn't given birth or a guy who, I mean, it's just kind of inspirational. And it's like the approach that you took and, you know, again, it's all what works for you, proverbial right. you, right? So I think, some people, I want to be in the hospital. The husband's like, I don't want to be around. Are you cool with that? Some people are like, want to do it organically. Some want to go to the dairy farm and get it raw milk poured all over them while they're doing it. It just depends. And that's why it's called freedom. Do what the fuck you want. This is your world right. as much as it is everyone else's. And no one should judge you for doing what you want to do.
1,000%.
Which is also, go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go.
Well, I guess is like hearing my experience would just be like, if anyone was interested in going the natural route, if anyone was interested in having a home birth or having an unmedicated birth, then they could hear that experience and be like, oh, okay, I'm going to file that away as part of my decision making. If somebody's like, I want to be in the hospital, whatever, whatever, give me the drugs, then great. Then they can be like, well, that's interesting that that's the way that you did it and good for you. And I'm going to do what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, look.
But I knew that I wanted to do it that way. And so I watched videos that people just, God bless them, posted to the internet of them giving birth.
Wow.
So I got to watch all these people give birth and like cry happy tears for these strangers.
Why don't you post yours?
Because I don't have it on video.
I know, because of the black, it fell. But that you could have got a better camera than your iPhone just propping it up on a desk. You could have prepared a little. You prepared so well. You prepared so well for this childbirth and the relaxation, the Hakuna Matatas, the bacon, the coal relaxing, everything. It was all set in motion. And the one thing you forgot is the documentation.
I know. The GoPros ran out of batteries or whatever. Maybe they didn't have cards in them. I don't know.
Are you going to have another one?
I don't know. We've been open to the idea. But It's, and I come from a family. I have three brothers, you know,
two that are twins.
Two that are twins.
And one's an actor, right?
You know, one is, yes, one is more of an actor than the other one. They both have acted. They both did a pilot with Gavin O'Connor, but that was a million years ago.
Well, one did Upside of Anger with Mike Binder, who I love.
Exactly, who I love as well. That's Dane, my brother Dane. He's a brilliant actor, but I don't know that he's going to put much effort into pursuing it.
Right, right.
He was also in the movie, it's called All at Once, that I made just like 5 years ago with a bunch of my friends. He auditioned for this small role and killed it. And then on set, in the middle of filming the scene, Johnny Boy, do you know Johnny Abrams? He lives so close to you.
I know the name, but I don't know him.
Okay, so our friend Johnny, who's an actor and a director, he was directing, and he says to Dane, "Hey, how about do this take in a German accent?" And Dane was like, "Beat, beat, okay." And he just did the scene in a freaking German accent.
Like,
and
then full-fledged. That's
the take that they used in the movie.
Really? So he just started doing it like this, like, "Erica, this is why I want to do this to you." Like, and he started.
"This is what I think about it, and I don't know."
I remember I auditioned for a movie called U571 about a U-boat. And I remember I went in there and I learned the whole thing in German. I go, "Sprechen Sie etwas Deutsch, können Sie lesen und schreiben, oder sehen Sie einen Einbauen jünger mit nur einem Fachnamen?" And the guy goes,
"You retained it now."
Yeah. And the guy, David Mostow, the director, goes, "What are you doing?" And I go, "Speaking German?" He goes, "Yeah, no, I want you to say it and read it in English." And I go, "I just worked 2 weeks on this. You fuck." I literally had learned this whole speech and all these things. He goes, "No, I want you to." So then I didn't really prepare to read in English. So I was like,
"No.
Do you read or write English? Do you speak German? Do you not speak German? Do you?" And I ended up doing it and it was fine, but I wasn't, you know, like prepared as much. And I worked so hard and Scheiße. Ich habe in die Hosen gemacht. Licken unter ein Arschloch. I just, yeah, anyway. So,
what did you just say? Did you just say, like, "Lower the periscope"?
I said, "Do you read, sprechen Sie etwas Deutsch, können Sie lesen? Do you read or write? Do you speak German? Do you read or write it? Or are you just some simple farm boy with the name? Do you," something I remember. I don't know. I just remember certain things like that. When something interests me, when I really go, "Oh my God, it'd be nice to learn this." Or I can memorize things when I'm really excited or really want it. Like, I remember learning Hannibal Lecter's, monologue in Silence of the Lambs. Like, you know, when he says, "A censor once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fob." You know, that one. Everybody knows that one. But I learned the one was like, did I already do this one? "Oh, Agent Sterling, you think you can dissect me with your blowable tool? You're so ambitious, aren't you? But you know what you look like to me with your good bag and your cheap shoes? You look like a rogue, a wild whore hustling the road with a little taste. The magician's came a little info bone, but you really know one more generation from pure white trash. Are you Agent Sterling? That accent you so desperately tried to share. Pure West Virginia. What was your father, dear? Was he a coal miner? Did he stink of the lamb? You know, quickly the boys found you. All those tedious, sticky fumblings in the back seats of cars where you could only dream of getting out, getting anywhere, getting all the way to the FBI." We could cut that, right, Ryan?
No!
I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. I didn't really do the accent as much, but I remember the dialogue anyway, because I really loved it. I was just enamored by his performance. I was like, "I want to memorize this. I want to memorize Christopher Walken's speech and this. I want to memorize, you know, Oscar Schindler what's his name? Ralph Fiennes, when he goes,
"Yes,
to cast a spell on you, you know, then you vocal them like I do. You see this, they have this power." I don't know, Ralph Fiennes. Do you do any impressions? They say every actor should do an impression. You have to have one. You don't do one.
No, I do my 2-year-old. That's it.
Let me hear it.
That's I want a nurse. I love your boobies.
That's a good one. I want nurse. I want your boobies.
She has an Italian accent. It's very weird.
Hey, you know, I really appreciate you being so open. I think I love this. It's just candid talk conversation. And we talked last time about the Scientology stuff. And I know you're so open and so brave because people would think, you know, you get lambasted and people say, oh, it's this and it's this. But you stick to your guns. This is what I believe, like the raw milk, like whatever. I live a happy existence. I'm happy. I'm not judging you. Why should you judge me? And you do that. And, you know, I wonder sometimes, like, because you're such a brilliant actress and you've done so much great work, do you think it ever hinders you from getting roles? Because some people are like, oh, she's a Scientologist. We're not hiring her. Do you think that happens?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I mean, that would be wild to me because I don't know exactly what they would think. I mean, it's like this ephemeral idea that like there's badness there. Like it's a trendy thing to just be like dismissive about it. But other than that, like if you truly have an issue, like I don't know. That's weird.
You know, I have a friend, my friend John Heater, I've talked about this. He's a Mormon.
Yeah.
He doesn't sit there and preach Mormonology to me or Mormonism or whatever. He doesn't, you know, I love, you know, they say that religion, some people will say religion, organized religion is really, is a terrible thing. Some people will say it's the only thing, right? There's the divisiveness. And there shouldn't be, because if it works for you and you're not telling other people what to do and how to live their lives, that is a success story when it comes to religion. I have a friend in Indiana who is a Christian boy, and they go to church and they love the Lord and that's what they do. And my friend John, they go to church and they have four kids and he's incredibly family oriented and nothing really like business-wise, industry-wise faze him. And he's able to have a really happy existence, and he's a Mormon and this is what he believes. And people will get the thing, the fundamentalists, like, well, aren't you a polygamist? He's like, no. That's what gave us a bad name. Those are people that like, that's not us. That's like, I think it's the fundamentalist. But so are there, you know, some people will give, you know, all of a sudden one thing will happen with a Scientologist. Something bad will happen. They'll get accused of something and it's terrible. And then all of a sudden it brings down the whole thing.
Yeah. And I think that's like that's a symptom of just not knowing anything about Scientology in general, which they've tried to solve by starting their own television network. So like, let us show you who we are. This is what we believe. This is, come look at our churches. These are the people that are doing Scientology. Like, there's so much information just trying to get out there about like, you don't know anything about us. So if somebody like makes a snide joke or makes some crazy accusation or whatever, then that's all you know. So it's like getting some more information out there, which I don't know if anybody's taking advantage of. I don't know if anybody's watching that.
What's the show?
It's an entire network called the Scientology Network that has shows on all day.
So look, in a nutshell, if someone says, okay, what is it exactly? What would you say in a sentence or two?
Scientology is an applied religious philosophy. Applied because you do it. It's not just a faith. Religious because it's addressing you as a spiritual being. And philosophy because it is all of the questions of life and why are we here and who are we and what potentials do we have and how do we reach them and what is the purpose of life, which is, by the way, to help you know, to be part of the entire like ecosystem of the planet and spiritually to be of service, as somebody might say.
Sounds pretty good.
That's it. But like in a nutshell, those words, applied religious philosophy, and believing that the man is basically good, not that man is basically bad.
It's hard to believe that lately, isn't it? It's kind of hard to believe that in general, that, you know, because, you know, for, you know, whatever you believe out there, you know, whether you're a Jew or a Scientologist or a Mormon or whatever, you know, Catholic, Christian, Hindu, we can go on. Sometimes you think, well, if there is a God, maybe this is his plan to kind of say, hey, fuck sticks. Why don't you wake up? You're destroying this fucking planet. You're killing each other. You're terrible to each other. And so it's like sort of like a wake up call. And I think that, you know, you hope at the end of this pandemic, you hope people just go, God, it's so much easier being nice to people.
Isn't that the truth? I mean, we noticed at the beginning, like a year ago, right? At the beginning, that people were being selfish. There were instances where people were scared about the food supply. People were not fully being respectful of personal space, and especially during, you know, when the kind of first wave of anxiety, we still don't know very much about this thing, just stay the hell away from me. People were like freaking out. But then people came to understand how to be safe and respectful. And then it just came to be about, I think, so much about gratitude for all the essential workers, so much about gratitude for what we do have.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, I mean, financially, it's been really rough on so many people, and government relief has been kind of probably insufficient. But there seems to be a lot of kind of appreciation for one's fellows.
Well, I hope we're getting there. And by the way, you mentioned a word that I think is the most important word you said. And it's something that my therapist constantly, right before I go, okay, good talking to you, Sandy. And she's like, gratitudes. Say your gratitudes. Say your gratitudes. And I'll tell you, I go to bed, and if I'm stressed and whatever, and I just close my eyes and I go, I thank my grandmother for freaking unconditionally loving me. I thank my, you know, all of a sudden, and it's better to go. It's better to go to bed with good thoughts in your mind, and it really helps me. It does.
That's wonderful. I could work that into my sleep training. You should, for the kids and for myself.
That really, Eric, I'm telling you, I'm not the most disciplined guy in the world, but I do just try to, when I go to bed, I lie in bed for a minute and I just think of everything I'm grateful for. And then somehow I fall asleep, and the next thing I know, it's the morning. Or sometimes it's 4 a.m, I go eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
That's so beautiful though. I mean, Cole will ask the kids, you know, what was your favorite part of the day? But to make it broader even than that is great.
Yeah. By the way,
and for the adults also, that's more necessary. The kids naturally go, I had a great day and I love you. And, you know.
That's true. I mean, but what's the one thing, by the way, in terms of Scientology, that people just, that you hate, that people assume? The one thing that just drives you bananas, like, why are they not educated? Why can't they ask questions? Why do they have to assume this? Is there one thing that just drives you bonkers?
No, and I'm not gonna rack my brain for it because I don't even want to go there. Like, the simplicity of taking ideas that we all can agree on, like gratitude and like being responsible for our own actions and so forth and so on, and finding a way to achieve some self-worth, you know, like finding being productive at a job, or if you hate your job, then, you know, coaching your kids' soccer team, or, you know, finding ways to be productive and be contributive. All of those things that we can all agree on that are super simple, you take them and you find out that there are actual practical steps and things that we can learn about our minds and things that we can do to make them more effective and not just ideas, and make them into actions. And that's just the simplicity of, you know, Scientology in general. You take like a Scientology book, and read that, and that's what people would see. If you take one of my favorites, is called Problems of Work. The Problems of Work. This is a universal thing. We all have to do it. We all have to work. Sometimes it sucks, you know. So, okay, maybe some piece of that can help you in that part of your life. It's so like unassailable.
It's so relatable.
It's so relatable.
You know, I think that, you know, ultimately, isn't the idea of religion or anything to love thy neighbor, to respect, to, I mean, if you're, look, I know you, I think you're a wonderful human being. And if you're doing something, it's not hurting you. It's only making, like, you're wonderful. I know you.
Well, thank you.
So, you know, something has to, it works for you. And you're, you know, so I say, like, if you're an asshole and you're a whatever religion you are, you're an asshole.
Well, but you're probably working on it.
Hopefully that's the key. That's it. The thing.
You know, if you have some kind of goal for self-growth, then good. And there are, by the way, I might have mentioned this 2.5 years ago when we talked about it before, but there are, I'm not sure, I can't say for sure that there are Mormon Scientologists, but I know for sure that there are plenty of Jewish Scientologists plenty of Nation of Islam who practice Dianetics and Scientology, plenty of Baptists, you know, so forth and so on, because it's not a faith. It's just a practice. It's not a, it's just tools to help you achieve those things, right? Whether you want to call it some peace, whether you want to call it being a better person, if you know you're an asshole, you know, if you've got a temper or whatever, or if whatever it is, achieving brotherhood with the universe, great. Then here's some tools.
So that's all part of it. If you have a problem, you can go to the Scientology. They have areas where you're like, I have a problem with my marriage. I have a problem with this. You can go and get help right away, and you don't have to necessarily go to a therapist, or you have to, is that a separate thing?
No, you can go and get help right away. And the thing with the thing that kind of I think is the main differentiation between seeing a therapist about it and seeing a Scientology counselor about it is that the Scientology counselor won't interpret anything for you, won't tell you what to think about your situation, won't tell you what you're doing wrong. They'll just ask you the questions that give you the opportunity to take responsibility and to help you see the way that things are. In a marriage, that's like, that is the key thing, is any dishonesty. And I don't straight up mean lies. I just mean lack of communication that's there, that kind of dishonesty, keeping secrets. It's like, all right, now out with them all. I don't know what they are. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You just have to get them all out, and then you're going to have to work through that stuff. But the linchpin of that working is getting all of those secrets out. Anything, even if it's like, you know, I spent too much money on your Christmas present, and then now we've got this debt on the Amex, or, you know, like stupid things that you just keep secrets from each other. And that's where you have problems.
I think that's the sign of a good therapist anyway. One that asks questions and doesn't give you answers. Because all the answers, you know the answers, you need to be asked them so you can adjust and make the right choices and make the right changes. Because if you're just asking for, oh, here's the answer, go lose weight. Oh, okay, I already know that. Yeah, well, why aren't you losing weight? Or why aren't you acting a certain way? Oh, because you're not putting the effort. Or because you don't, why don't you love yourself? Okay, because I did this. Okay, well, don't do that. There's just like, it's such a cyclical thing that we go through that in therapy that, it's just like, you know, we know what to do. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes, you know, I needed a little bit of something to sort of help me. And, you know, that's okay. It's like sort of anyway. But look, I love that you're just so passionate about it and so brave. And I really think that if you, you know, wish more people could be like that in terms of anything they believe in, because this it's sort of the shitstorm in the past X amount of years. Where now having a belief about something, you get lambasted for anything. And so you have to be really careful other than making a fart joke online. I kind of shut up because I know I'm going to put my foot in my mouth. I say something, all of a sudden, I'm unfollowing you. I'm like, I don't mean it. I'm not a bad person.
Well, that's the thing. That's the flip side of it, is we all have to be willing to hear each other. That's what's so rough, is like, you can't make assumptions about what someone's belief means about the rest of them.
I know, you're right. And it does get sort of convoluted and tough, because I don't talk politics. I just don't do it on this show, because I think it's like, you know, there's so many things, shows that people talk politics, but I could easily talk about things. And Ryan's like, don't do it. Don't do it.
We can talk about philosophy, the underlying philosophies, not about the people that we expect to represent them in the government, but, you know, what we are hoping that they represent and the actions that they take based upon the ideas that we hold, that's a separate thing, you know?
Just have a conscience. That's all I want people to do, is have a effing conscience. When you're thinking about what people are doing, have a conscience. Imagine you are being that person that's being oppressed or being whatever it is. Just in life, if you just put yourself in their shoes for a second, your perspective will change. This is called Shit Talking with Erica Christensen. Fans from my Patreon, you can join Patreon, patreon.com/insideofyou. These are questions just for you. There's rapid fire if you want. Here we go.
Wait, oh my God. Okay, yes, go. I'm ready.
All right. Leanne P., of all the roles you've played, which one do you identify with the most?
Oh my gosh. Well, I do... find probably more Julia in me now than when I played her, but now more Julia Braverman Graham from Parenthood.
Awesome. Ray H, Ray Harada, what are you doing to stay mentally healthy?
Working always on improving myself as an individual and getting outdoors.
And by the way, are you using the Echelon treadmill?
I meant to bring that up. Yes, thank you so much. I did a ride this morning.
How great is it?
It's really amazing. It's really amazing for, it's like a new toy still. I got it election day. It arrived November 3rd. It showed up on my doorstep. It was extremely heavy, but we set it up. And I think I waited till the next day before I actually got on it. But it's still a new toy.
I love it.
Like, I see it and I'm like, well, what am I not going to ride it? It's just sitting right there.
Yeah.
Get on it.
And you got that monitor and you could just feel like you're part of something and just see, I have ADD, so I need a monitor. I can't just go, oh, I'm going to be on a stationary bike. I need to watch something.
No.
Oh,
Have you ever done it where you're like watching a movie on your actual television?
I got to beat Herb and I got to pass Sandy and I got to be in, you know, I got to see how far I can get. Otherwise,
yeah.
I got to be competitive when I'm doing it.
I got dropped today. Some people really kicked my butt.
Doing what? Exercising? Riding the bike?
Yeah, riding the bike.
Yeah.
Riding the bike. I was like, damn, these people just put me to shame this morning.
I like it. But so what are you doing mentally healthy? I guess you're doing that, right?
Yep. Well, actually, we can make getting outside and exercise separate things because they're not, because exercising inside is also super helpful and wonderful. But yeah, getting outside, literally seeing the sky and getting some fresh air and sunshine in your lungs is really helpful. And then also, you know, working on myself.
Nico P, what's some of the best feedback you've ever received? The one thing that you remember someone going, God, swim fan, you were just, or traffic, you are the best actress ever. Oh, Parenthood, your role, Julia, Gulia, you were amazing. What is it? What's the one that you remember that really you remember going, oh, that felt good? Could be from of someone you admire, some from your dad, some from Cole.
Oh, from Cole. The best feedback he's ever given me is that when he's watching me in something that he forgets that it's me.
Best thing you could say to an actor.
Best thing you could say to an actor.
The worst thing you could say is like, I can't take you seriously.
It's just you being weird.
Rosenbaum, you're bald, but you're still you. I don't get it. Carly S, what's your biggest guilty pleasure in life?
In life. Ooh, in life. I mean, this is funny, but what my mind went to was Instagram. Because it's just like reading a magazine. I use it for genuine inspiration. I see all those people getting fit out there and being organized and all those things and cooking beautiful meals. So I love all of it. But it's also like, if I'm procrastinating, I will be on Instagram. I know that. And I'll be like, okay, put it down.
Lisa H, what's your favorite storyline on Parenthood?
Well, I mean, mine. It's the whole trying to conceive, and then the whole adoption process being long and arduous, and that's also relatable to so many people. And I'm grateful that I was able to address that.
Mary B, last question: what life lessons have you learned during the COVID crisis and the whole 2020 experience that you want to be sure to teach to your little girls?
Well, an interesting thing about the pandemic is that I think it has brought to the forefront of our attention how we are responsible for our community, because we are directly responsible for others in our environment. You know, and it took something like this, like, you know, you don't want to get your neighbors sick and you don't want them dying, to put that into perspective. You know, the respect and the joyfulness that we treat each other also spreads everywhere. And so that's an important thing. And then also, this is a little bit, hopefully I can express this, but basically being responsible for your own life as much as you can. I know so many entrepreneurs that have had a really rough time the last year, and I just respect those people so much for pivoting, for figuring it out, for finding ways that they can continue to scratch their creative itch or whatever, but basically, like, you know, not taking it back, taking the ownership back on your own life from wherever it may have gone, for if it has gone to your significant other or your job or whatever.
I like that. It's more about being aware of other people and what they're going through. And I think it's just a lot of different things. I mean, it's for me, it's just really respect. Like, you know, like I don't have little girls, but what I'll tell my two little dogs, who one just came in the room and sitting here, the old guy is 12 and a half.
I know.
He never comes in here like that. He just came in here and sat with me and wants to sit with me. And I'm like, you know, I don't know how long I have with this little sucker. And he's like, he's old and he's, you know, it's just like, I told him, I looked at him one day, I said, you tell me when you're done, man, and we'll be done together. But as long as you're not in pain, and as long as you're still eating and laughing and playing with the little girl, my little pup.
Yeah.
As long as you want to be here, I want to have you here. I'm not going to be selfish about it. So, you know, because it's easy to be selfish and, like, you know, he's gone blind twice. And my friend Harland, he's so funny. Harland will go.
Williams?
Yeah. He's it's unbelievable. Like, I go, yeah, you know, Irv went blind. He goes, yeah, buddy, you know, maybe it's time to put him down. I go, what? No, he just went blind. They're working on getting his sight back. He's on pills. Well, buddy, I'm just saying, you know, Irv stubbed his toe. Yeah, maybe it's time to put him down, but no, he stubbed his toe. Whoa. What are you doing? You know, Irv, how's Irv doing? Is it time? No, you've been saying this for 8 years. It's not time. but I love him. And unconditional love is the most important thing in the world.
It absolutely is. Here, here.
Well, listen, I hope you had fun, because this was, to me, this was honestly, I know you're going to probably go back to Cole and say, it was just weird. We talked about breastfeeding, and I'm telling you, this is fun. This is real conversation and just candid talk. And I learned so much. I know that I don't have to cut the umbilical cord right away. No, I learned that natural childbirth could be great. I learned that raw milk, I might not be farting and bloated if I have raw milk. I should try it. There's a lot of things I learned. Hikes. This is an hour of therapy for me.
I'm so glad I could be of service.
Yes. And I can't wait to actually hang with you.
I know, man. I don't know when that will be, but I will disinfect a package of raw cheese and leave it on your doorstep.
Really? And there's no real risk in me eating it.
I mean, I don't think so, but
as long as you're getting it from that farm, I'll try it. What's the worst thing that could happen?
Yeah, so you get some toots.
Shit my pants.
Come on.
Erica, thank you for allowing me to be inside of you again. I really love this. I truly love this, and I expect to get some texts from you.
Oh, you got it. It's coming. I have notes here. We're going to talk soon.
All right.
Love you, buddy.
All my love to the family, too.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. And there was a little nugget in there, my little nugget. Yeah. Irv. Irv showed up in the podcast. It was, I think, the only time he ever appeared in the podcast.
Yeah.
Oof, I'll get emotional just thinking about it. I miss him. And that this podcast was recorded probably back in January or February. So he just came into the room and I was like, there he is. I do miss the guy. People have been sending me gifts and pictures of Irv, and I've got like this whole shrine of him. So it's really nice. So I don't want to continue to talk about Irv, although I will, because I love him and he's my son, damn it. And I will miss him. But thank you for all the comments. 13 years is a long time to have a dog, and he lived a good life. And I hope to see him again someday. Again, thanks, Erica Christensen, for being so open. I hope you guys enjoyed that podcast. And again, subscribe to the podcast. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can subscribe on Apple, all this stuff. You could listen and watch and enjoy. Again, you could join Patreon, patreon.com/inside. the Inside of You online store for merch, the sunspin.com for merch and booking us for Zooms and things. And we really appreciate it. I appreciate all the patrons out there who support the show ongoing. It's just amazing. And so many great messages and comments. And I do sometimes I respond, but a lot of times I just read them and I don't respond. Next week, we've got a really fantastic episode. Another fantastic episode.
He might be in the room.
Yes. That.
Somewhere.
Is Freddy Krueger, Robert Englund. Yep. If you are still listening, you just heard it. It's awesome. And he's one of my, I love the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. He's a great guy. He has so much information. This is a really great episode. So make sure you tune in next week for Robert Englund, Freddy Krueger, Nightmare on Elm Street. I think you're going to really enjoy it. We worked together in a movie called Urban Legend, and that was a lot of fun. Ryan, anything else?
No, just waiting on my second vax. That's all.
Oh, yeah. I noticed that the movie you were backed off a little bit still. You weren't so.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were kind of like
still weird. I'm just trying to, I don't know.
You're weird around people right now.
I'm weird around people anyway, but you know, I'm weird around people even more now. I'm just trying to like not get it before I get my second dose, to get my second dose in a week.
All right.
So
I think you'll be okay.
I'm not worried
about you. I think you're gonna be fine. But you know, it's good to be a little cautious. I wish more people were cautious. I don't think we would have went through the hell we were in. Jesus. If people were just a tad more cautious. But let's get into all the patron love. I have to, at the end of every episode, I always give a shout out to all the patrons. So bear with me. And if you're done listening, I understand. But these are my lovable patrons, and join Patreon and you'll get your name shouted out as well. Nancy
D.
Mary
B.
Leah
F.
S.
Shit.
Trisha.
F.
There we go. Sarah V. Little Lisa. Yukiko. Jill E. Brian H. Lauren G. Nico P. Robin S. Jerry W. Robert B. Jason W. Apotheon. Kristen K. Amelia O. Allison L. Jess J. Lucas M. Raj C. Joshua D. Emily S. CJ P. Samantha M. Jennifer N. Jackie P. Stacy L. Maybe a baseball announcer. Carly H. Here's the pitch on the way to Carly S, Jen S in left field, Jamal F, Janelle B in right. Here's the pitch to Carrie B, Tabitha 272. It's a line drive to right field. Ashley Ryan picks it up, throws over to Kimberly E. Mike E is now up to bat. Mike E is friends with Marissa N, and Eldon Supremo is on deck. 99 more in Ramira, Santiago M, Sarah F, Chad W, Leanne P, Rhea A, Maya P is the lineup for today's ball game. This game brought to you by Maisha, Maisha C, Maddie S, Kendrick F, Ashley E, Shannon D, Matt W, Belinda N, Kevin V, James R, Robert, maybe we do one as Ronnie Dangerfield. Hey, Chris H, Osborne. Hey, Osborne before you. All right. How are you, Osborne? I sent you a package. You still have the package got sent back. Give me your right address, will you, Osborne? Dave H., Samantha S., Spider-Man.
Chase.
Sheila.
G.
Ray.
H.
I'll tell you what.
I can't do this voice, man.
You've been doing great, I'll tell you. Tabitha T., Misha H., Tom N., Suzanne B., Katie F., Liliana A., Michelle K., Hannah B., who's that? Hannah B, Michael S, Talia M, Luke H, Andrew T, Betsy O, Claire Baby. That was my spacey. Didn't sound like him.
Oh, it just sounded like bored to you.
Bored. Who's this? Liz G. No, J.
Malkovich?
That's Malkovich. That's correct.
Laura L. Chad L. Rochelle.
Nathan E, Brandel, Taylor K, Neil A, Marion, Meg K, Janelle P, Trav L, Dan L, Jennifer J, Wayne M, Diane R, Ojeda, Lorraine G, Olga C, Corey M, Carrie H, Veronica K, Big Stevie W, Kendall T, Lindsay M, Carol D, Katie G, Sandy B, Angel M, Eric C, Rhiannon. Rhiannon rings like a bell through the night, and wouldn't you love to love her? Stephen M, Corey K, Super Sam, Sherry S, and Coleman G are my lovable top-tier patrons. I love you all. If I blitzed over your name, I can't spend that much time. It's just me riffing. This has been really nice. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Continue to listen. Please continue to support. I love doing it, and I will continue to do it as long as you guys are loving it. So spread the word. If every one of you just sent an email to all your friends and asked them to please subscribe, that would be wonderful. From myself, Michael Rosenbaum, along with...
From myself, Ryan Tejas. I was trying the Rodney Dave.
Hey, up here in the Hollywood Hills.
Up here in the Hollywood Hills.
It comes from your chest.
It comes from my chest. I'm not sitting up
right. You got to sit upright, Ryan.
Well, for me, Ryan Tejas.
Yes, in the Hollywood Hills of California.
Hollywood Hills, California.
Look in the camera. There we are. Uh-huh. We love you guys. Thank you so much for allowing me to be inside of each and every one of you today. And I hope you have a gorgeous week and be good to yourself. Love yourself and be good to others. All right. See ya.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.